Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Back in on the drive, Carrington here, Kylie here, Sports Machine here, taking you up until 6 o'clock. In the 3 o'clock hour, we'll get our first email contestants, booth@610sports.com, B-O-O-T-H @610sports.com. What's the biggest lie that you've been caught up in? Jesse Smollett got himself caught up in a very big lie. We're having a contest right now. We'll have two winners. One will get $25 to Gates. One will get $25 to Old Shawnee Pizza. We'll also take a trip inside the mind of the machine. We'll do that coming up in just a little bit. Today's pop quiz was Bohemian Rhapsody. Queen is set to open up the Oscars this Sunday. I have not seen that movie. Have either of you guys seen it? I plan to see it. I just haven't seen it yet.
I have not seen it, and I'm not trying to be crude here. Isn't the lead singer from Queen dead?
I don't know. No. I don't.
I'm pretty sure he is.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm
looking forward to that show. It's going to be awesome.
Kind of like your soccer questions. I'm just not the one to come
through. Kylie, check that out for me.
For Queen information. Uh-huh. So today, I saw a very interesting quote.
I can confirm.
He's dead?
Freddie Mercury.
Oh, that show's going to be awesome. No Freddie Mercury. Who needs him?
R.I.P.
He died 28 years ago.
Yeah, a little too soon. Too soon.
I saw a quote from Rustin Dodd, who talked to Jorge Soler today. The Royals' Jorge Soler was able to return to Cuba this offseason for the first time in 8 years. His parents and sister are already here in the States, but he spent 12 days visiting extended family. Quote, amazing time. Beautiful. That's what Jorge Soler said to Rustin Dodd earlier today. I think if we had to go down the line and say, what Royals players are you most looking forward to watching in 2019? What Royals players do you think have the most to prove this upcoming season? I think Jorge Soler is probably at the top. The only other player I think can maybe even rival Jorge Soler would be Hunter Dozier. I look at Jorge Soler last year. I don't want people to forget this. He was actually putting together a really good season. He played in 60 games, hit 9 home runs, hit for a decent average. Like, he completely turned things around. You guys remember Fanning was ready to crucify Jorge Soler the first couple of starts, gave him a little bit more time. He turned things around. So I'm really curious to see what Jorge Soler can do this year. He is now 27 years old, which we agree you are hitting your athletic prime at 27. You were just starting to figure things out. If he can go back to being the power-hitting right fielder that many people thought that he could be, a guy that could hit 20, 25, maybe even 30 home runs, I don't think you're asking him to hit for an incredibly high average. You'd be happy with him hitting 30 home runs, but hitting 270, hitting 265. I'm looking at Jorge Soler as maybe the athlete on the Royals, the player on the Royals with the most approved this season.
If Jorge Soler hits 270 with 30 home runs, I'm going to be absolutely thrilled, and I think everybody else is going to be. I mean, that makes him every bit worth the money he's getting. It makes the trade for Wade Davis for Jorge Soler worthwhile. But to me, the answer to that question is pretty easy and obvious. It's Danny Duffy. You paid Danny Duffy in the offseason a couple of years ago. He's got that number one next to his name, and that's not his fault. But quite frankly, everybody knows, as well as the Royals brass, that Danny Duffy's not a number one pitcher. His problem, CDOT, has been consistency. When Danny Duffy's good, he's great. But we haven't seen enough consistent Danny Duffy really throughout his entire career. So to me, it's put up or shut up time for this guy. And he's going to be in a Royals uniform the next few years, or somebody's going to want a guy with his stuff and his upside. But the truth is, he has to put together a full season where maybe he doesn't have 200 innings, but he goes out there, he wins 12, 13, 14 games, and he's at minimum, the best Royals starting pitcher. Because when it comes to his career, you might be able to say that one time for a guy that gets paid the money that he gets. So to me, there's more pressure on Danny Duffy than anybody else.
I think it's a different kind of year for Duffy than it is for Jorge Soler. Soler had the injury last year. He's 27. Like, I still think there's a little bit of leeway. There's a little bit of rope. I will agree with you that if we're talking about guys who this is a make or break year for, I would put Danny Duffy at the top. The Danny Duffy is getting to the point where you're not young and promising anymore. Danny Duffy's my age. He's 30 years old. Now, that's not old for life, but for baseball and then having expectations and then having future potential, man, you don't have that at 30 years old as an athlete.
And it's not like you just came up. I mean, Danny Duffy's been on this squad forever.
That most of the time, you know who you are at this point in your career. So I'm with you. This year is the last time we can talk about Danny Duffy, and maybe some of you have already made the choice with Duffy of, hey, he's never going to be a guy that you can consistently count on to give you 180 innings. He's never going to be a guy that you think can win 15 games back-to-back season. Maybe a lot of you have already come to that conclusion with Danny Duffy. I'm not here to tell you that you're wrong, but I will agree with you. The person who I would consider this to be a make-or-break year for will be Danny Duffy. You signed a four-year deal. You're now in year two of that deal. You had a disappointing year one. If you have a disappointing year two, I will not be surprised if Dayton and this organization tries to move on from that contract.
Who do you have the most optimism for? Because to me, I guess the answer is still going to be Adalberto. Don't call me Raul Mondesi, because
it's not even close.
I think that he's got the potential to be a guy that hits 300, that plays a gold glove shortstop, that knocks in 100 RBI. I mean, I think that he could become your future all-star, but that's not the only answer to the question, man. I'm really curious to see what both Hunter Dozier and Ryan O'Hearn do, if for nothing else, based on what they did at the end of last season.
I kind of feel like I already know about Dozier. Maybe I've closed the book on Dozier. I think he's below average. I think it's over for Hunter Dozier. I think that Royals fans, I think Royals front office people, kind of look at what happened with Hosmer and look at what happened at Moose and then want to bring these kids up all together. I just don't see it from Dozier. Maybe you guys have seen it from him. I don't see it.
I haven't seen enough to say that ship has sailed. Not nearly.
I don't think he – I would be stunned – if he becomes a special player. Can he become a productive major league player? We'll see. I think the ceiling of where he was drafted, the expectation that many people have put on him, I think you would have seen that light. You would have seen that spark by now. You got to think, he couldn't get on the field for the most part. There's no way you go get Mike Moustakas last year if you thought Dozier was ready. And then when he's been given opportunities, he ain't really lit the world on fire. I'm kind of over Dozier as being a high-end guy that you can count on, but maybe he becomes a productive major league player.
To your point, the wave of players, though, and you're right, because they're bringing up Hunter Dozier at the same time as Ryan O'Hearn, at the same time as Adalberto Mondesi, and the plan is this year to bring up some of those pitchers they drafted the last couple of years. Reality check, man. That's the only way to do it in a market like Kansas City. You have to bring up Haas and Moose and trade for Kane and Eske and get your Donovan Tur and Danny Duffy and find Salvi. Those guys all came up at the same time. It's not like you're in Boston or New York or L.A. where you can sign a free agent or make a blockbuster trade. It has to be not just C.1 or 2 players at the minor league level. It has to be 3, 4, 5, or 6 if you're ever going to get back to competition and try to get back to the playoffs and eventually win a World Series. So I have no problem with Dayton the way that he's kind of bringing up this entire wave of players this season.
Coming up in 10 minutes, we'll get into our email contest. What's the biggest lie that you've been caught up in? Go ahead and email it in, booth@610sports.com. We'll get to our first entries coming up in just a little bit. But we're going to try something a little bit different. The segment is going to be called Something or Nothing. BK, take it away.
All right, so my first something or nothing for you guys, I got to get the bet here in just a second. Marvin Harrison is the only multi-time All-Pro running back or wide receiver to win a Super Bowl since 2000. Is that something or nothing?
I don't think this stuff matters at all. Like, maybe I'm different than everybody else. I don't think this really matters. Like, you're telling me that the Rams couldn't have won the Super Bowl this year? They've had an All-Pro running back in Todd Gurley. They got to the Super Bowl this year. Brandon Cooks is a good wide receiver. Like, these stats, to me, I think it's way more, was that causation versus correlation? I don't think this really has that much of an impact.
Yeah, I'm with you. That was a little bit out there. That was like a designated hitter on Wednesdays from the left side of the plate with against a left-handed pitcher. Yeah, I don't think that means much of anything. I think there's like 2 or 3 or 4 teams in the next few years that have a chance to win 2 or 3 or 4 Super Bowls. You know, the Chiefs, the Rams, the Saints, the Patriots. At some point, Tom Brady's got to retire.
And, I mean, just look at it. I mean, you're telling me that the Patriots couldn't have won when Randy Moss as a wide receiver? They certainly had an opportunity to win. This stat just doesn't really hold a lot of weight to me.
Thought this was interesting. Whit Merrifield had a comment in The Athletic. This is a quote from Rustin Dodd's story today. He said, quote, "We want to play in games where we feel like it's more important for us to win. It's not okay. We have to develop guys, and if we win, great. It's important for us to play in games where we need to win, and there's a reason for us to win. Something or nothing?"
I think this is nothing. This seems like a quote from the future. This seems like a quote from like 2021. So maybe that's something that Brandon Kiley has found a way to talk to Whit Merrifield 2 seasons down the line. As much as the Royals can say that we're trying to win this year, we're trying to put the best product on the field and do all this, that kind of stuff, you didn't spend enough in free agency, and your players aren't developed enough for me to think that you even believe you have a serious chance. I'll keep saying this about the Royals, and I'm not negative about the Royals. If they win 15 more games than they won last year, that's 73 wins. Every team in baseball right now would take a 15-win improvement. That would be a significant improvement. That would still be a bad season by league standards, but for the Royals, that would be a very good year next year. So this comment means nothing. That's a stance to have in 2020, maybe 2021. That's not the stance to have in 2019.
You ready for a triple word score? It's a very precarious situation for Whit Merrifield. You know, this is nothing, man. He's in a spot where he's the leader of the team. He's the best player of the team. He's at the age where he's in his prime. He just got a new contract. But the rest of the team sucks, and he understands that. Whit has been a victim of bad timing, whether it was the fact that he wasn't an all-star this year because Jose Altuve and Gleyber Torres were tearing the cover off the ball at the second base position, or whether it was the fact that the Royals won the World Series and went to back-to-back World Series the year before he came up. He hasn't exactly had the best timing, and now that he's here and he's the best player on the team, like you just pointed out, there's not a lot of talent there, so is it much or is it nothing? It's nothing, but quite frankly, BK, this is what I want to hear him say because that's pretty much what he had to say.
Final thing here is Ned Yost has apparently changed his philosophy on the bullpen. He said, quote, "I've always come into spring training looking for a closer. I want a closer. I want a guy who can handle the ninth inning. But for me this year, I've totally abandoned that. I'm looking for guys who can handle high leverage situations. If I've got three or four guys that can handle those spots, then I can get us out of situations in the seventh and the eighth and then the ninth." Something or nothing?
I think this is a little bit of both. I think it's something because he's telling you right now they don't have a closer. This is nothing because this is like a single person telling you they have Valentine's Day. Well, you ain't got nobody to spend Valentine's Day with. You don't have a closer. So I understand why this year it's a little bit different. You're telling me back in 2014 you would have wanted three or four guys that can handle high leverage situations. You had a closer in 2014. You had a closer in 2015. You don't in 2019, so you're changing your strategy. So the comments are nothing, but it is something because they don't feel like right now they have that guy in their bullpen.
Kind of like when ugly people tell you it's what's on the inside that counts. Like, no, it's not necessarily. This actually is something, though, BK, because you're talking about Ned, who was the manager who put together, I would say, the greatest bullpen in the history of baseball and certainly the greatest back end of the bullpen in the history of baseball when you talk about HDH. Here's the issue. None of those guys are on the team anymore. Here's your bullpen. Tell me when you get excited, guys. Peralta, Boxberger, McCarthy, Hill, Flynn, Newberry, Lively, McWilliams, Ellis, whatever they end up doing with Kennedy and Dykeman. So that's the problem is they don't exactly see how to have a bunch of bullets in the holster.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll go inside the mind of the machine. But first, we'll read our first contestants. Booth at 610sports.com. What's the biggest lie you've been caught up in? And we'll get back into the Zion Williamson situation as this puts Nike in a, what did you call it? A very precarious situation. We'll talk about that coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll take a trip inside the mind of the machine. But right now, we have an email contest. Booth, B-O-O-T-H, at 610sports.com. The contest is very simple. If you missed it, Jesse Smollett of the show Empire told not a little lie, a big lie, and he has been found. The hoax has been unveiled by the Chicago police. Here was Jesse Smollett explaining the situation at the beginning.
I was bruised, but my ribs were not cracked. They were not broken. I went to the doctor immediately. Frank Gatson drove me. I was not hospitalized. Both my doctors in LA and Chicago cleared me to perform, but said to take care, obviously. And above all, I fought back.
I don't think we're really paying this the proper respect it deserves. Like, he's put together the best acting performance since Leonardo DiCaprio in A Wolf of Wall Street.
Who was he saying that in front of? Like an audience?
It was like a concert. It was like a laugh track behind it. His acting over the last couple of weeks has been downright impressive. But that's not the story here. So we're doing an email contest, booth at 610sports.com. It's what's the biggest lie you've been caught up in? Our guy Brandon, he is the keeper of the email contest. BK, read some of your favorite emails.
Let's start with this one. We've got a few of them here for you. I've got four total. The first one, I lied to my wife about a second job. Instead, I was gambling $10,000 into debt. My favorite, the reason why I picked this one is because of the way that it ends.
I think this is my buddy Ed.
It went on for 6 months, then nothing more. There was no explanation as to what happened afterwards because I think we all understand what takes place after something like that.
I'm not rewarding him for that story. There was no funny. There was no punchline at the end. I was lying to my wife. The end. No, that's not good enough to get you $25 to Gates or Old Shiny Pizza. You got to come a little harder than that.
Are we assuming the end is divorce? I mean, every girl that I've had a relationship with, 10 grand gambling, you're done.
This is like the movie where they kind of leave it open at the end and you get to decide what happens.
You got divorced, buddy. Sorry about that.
We all know what happens there.
Millions of fish in the sea, sir.
I assume the two big guys named Sal come break your thumbs. That's what I assume happened.
This is from Matt. I don't know how he emailed us then. Matt says, when I was a kid, I faked being sick to the point of going to the hospital. Had thousands of dollars worth of tests being run on me. After they all came back negative, I broke down in tears and told my parents that I was faking everything so I could get out of school. This was back in the second grade.
Wow. That's commitment right there. We've all been the kid that stayed home sick from school and we're not actually sick, but to go to the hospital and thousands of dollars. The reason I wear glasses, C-Dot, is because my older sister wore glasses and I thought they were cool. So I faked the eye test. They're like, what's that big letter at the top? I don't know, G?
Are you serious?
No, man, that's E like it always is. So now I've got bad vision the rest of my life.
I just don't know why if you were committed to saying you were sick to get out of school, at some point you had a chance to get out of it and you were still going to be in trouble. But you really let the process go to you getting MRIs and x-rays. And then you were like, oh, I lied this whole time. Like, that's not even a fun day to spend out of school.
Imagine how nervous you are when you're inside the MRI machine. You're like trying to come up with more lies. You know that you're already screwed. Yeah, it's one thing to stay home sick one day. It's another thing to cost your parents 20 grand.
All right, let's see what else we got in the email contest. Booth, B-O-O-T-H, at 610sports.com. What's the biggest lie you've been caught up in?
This one comes from Brock. He says, back when I was in high school, I was driving to work. I stopped at a convenience store to get a drink. I backed out and smashed the trash can at the store. I told my parents I swiped a pole as I was backing out at my buddy's driveway. And I thought I had them convinced until my uncle called them and told them they have video of me hitting the trash can at his work. He thought it was funny.
He got fired on his day off like Craig.
Did not.
That's the favorite so far. That one's the favorite. Hold on, can I read you one we have on the text line?
And yeah, then go ahead.
This is the early. So that concludes our first round of Booth at 610sports.com. We'll have
his
more.
Uncle screwed him.
I've been lying to my daughter for 8 years, telling her that her grandpa was in the hospital when he's been in prison. I don't know how to get out of this lie. That's on the text line, Booth at 610sports.com.
You got to fake a funeral. You got to say grandpa died. You got to have a bunch of people come together. You got to have a whole fake grave and all the tombstones. You got to fake the funeral is the only thing you can do.
I mean, he's not dead, though. He's in the hospital. He's not dead.
Oh, I thought he's in prison. You said he's in prison.
Yeah, but I'm saying is her grandpa was in the hospital when he's in prison. Is he in prison for the rest of his life? Is he never getting out of jail at some point?
I feel like that's actually an important question
to ask.
Yeah,
that's a very important question because, I mean, maybe he's getting out in 3 years. You can keep the lie up for another 3 years. If he's doing life in Leavenworth and he's never coming out, life with no chance of parole, at some point you just got to tell her. You know what I mean?
I just found out last year that when I was younger, when they put my dog down, rest in peace, Roy, my parents told me, like, they tell a lot of little kids, right? The dog's going to the farm. I actually thought for years that my dog, old Roy, was on a farm, and turns out that Roy was never on a farm.
No, Roy was not in a farm.
His name was Roy?
Yeah, but he's never on a farm.
Go ahead and email booth at 610sports.com, B-O-O-T-H at 610sports.com. There's so many things interesting to talk about the Zion Williamson situation. I'm very curious to see how Nike responds to this.
Their stock's down $1 billion so far. How's that going?
I kind of think the stock had a lot more to do with some other stuff. They released these shoes that were $325 during the All-Star break, and they don't charge up. So a lot of people are very unhappy that, hey, I spent all this money. Now I can't use my shoes. So I actually think that has more to do than the Zion Williamson
situation.
Could
there be a worse look for a shoe company than a guy that you hopefully future endorser of your product 30 seconds into one of the biggest college games of all time where everybody's watching? You pointed out what was like the fifth biggest viewed college basketball game of all time, and 30 seconds into it, said player blows out of his Nike where they zoom in on it like 1,000 times. That's why the stock's down.
See, I think PR wise, I think they've done a really good job so far. They issued a statement, said we obviously support our product. We wish the best for Zion, and Duke is probably their biggest Nike basketball situation.
For sure.
How they keep going, because the Zion Williamson situation is the biggest story right now in college basketball. What do they do? I think more than anything, what happens at this, if you want my prediction on what's going to happen, I think Zion eventually signs with Nike and they give him a custom shoe. You got to think about it. Now, I know you guys don't care about sneakers in this context. That shoe's made for Paul George. It's It's made for just smaller people. The shoe's not really made for 6'8", 280, running, jumping, cutting, and doing all the things that he does. It's just
they're
not built
on Nike.
Way.
And by the way, Paul George is no small guy. I mean, I'm like 5'9". Paul George is like 6'6".
He ain't Zion Williamson.
He ain't 6'7", 285. By the way, Zion is heavier than every player in the NBA except for one dude. But then that's on Nike to not make a special pair the same way that if they were making shoes for Andre the Giant, you don't give them Paul George's shoes.
But just all these shoes are built differently. I mean, I know you don't wear sneakers like that, but like Kobe's shoe is built differently than LeBron's shoe because LeBron just needs way more support than Kobe does. He's just a bigger person. Like I think eventually what's going to happen is Zion's going to get his own shoe and it's just going to be custom made for someone of his size.
Have you ever seen or heard of that? I know you're a sneakerhead. Has that ever happened to one of your shoes?
Yeah, no, I mean, but I'd say there aren't many people like Zion Williamson size that play basketball at the level that he does.
Have you ever seen or heard what happened yesterday where the best player in the biggest game, 30 seconds into it, the reason that he didn't play the rest of the game was because his shoes didn't work?
No, we've never seen a situation like what happened with Zion Williamson yesterday. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll take a trip inside the mind of the machine. That's next. It's The Drive.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
Back in on The Drive, someone asked what the email is again to email for the biggest lie. Right now, because of Jesse Smollett, we are doing an email contest. What's the biggest lie that you've been caught up in? Booth, B-O-O-T-H, at 610sports.com. We'll actually give two winners. We've got one gift card to Gates. We've got one gift card over to Old Shiny Pizza. So all you got to do is tell us your story. But you got to email it. Don't call it in. Don't text it in. You got to email it if you want a chance to win. This is a funny one on the text line. I have a mild form of Tourette's, which only makes me twitch. When I was diagnosed in second grade, I used it as an excuse to curse in class a couple of times, and then I told them about it. They then figured out I don't have the worst form of Tourette's. I went home and got the biggest whooping of my life, is what someone put on the text line. I can't imagine being in like second and third grade and you feel like you can curse and no adult can do anything. That had to be a very empowering feeling.
I appreciate the kid taking advantage of his condition. Good for you, son.
Yeah, I mean, he took advantage of the situation and then it did not work very well for him. Last one we'll read on the text line, on the Protein House Eat With The Purpose text line. Once I told a girl that my ex-girlfriend had died to get some sympathy, even though she had just moved away, even went as far as fake crying. Long story, we ended up dating for 7 months. We then ran into my ex-girlfriend at the Big 12 tournament. She threw a drink in my face in public, never spoke again. You gotta email these in. These are too good. These are too good to just go on the text line. These are just too good. Booth at 610sports.com. What's the biggest lie that you've ever been a part of? We'll read some more of your emails coming back up at 4:30.
I would have stuck with it if I was that dude. I would have been like, oh my God, you're alive. Thank goodness.
That's probably why he got the drink in his face. Right now, we'll take a trip. I think that was just a trip. We'll take another trip inside the mind of the machine.
Welcome back in, C-Dot. Brandon, good to have you back. So the famous Simpsons episode, Homer at the Bat, was aired yesterday, 25 years ago. C-Dot, is The Simpsons the best ever adult animated series? By the way, that episode included Jose Canseco, Ken Griffey Jr., Daryl Strawberry.
I don't really even think it's an argument of what the other one is. I think we reached the point that The Simpsons have been on longer than any show other than 60 minutes. So, yes, The Simpsons, if you talk about episodes, yes, it is the greatest show. I'd probably say Simpsons 1, South Park 2, Family Guy 3, if you had to rank the top three animated series.
I think I'd go Simpsons 1 because, like you said, and nobody watches it. Somebody has to watch it. I guess it's still on TV. Yeah,
and it gets prime billing. It comes on Sunday after NFL.
BoJack Horseman? I've never seen that, but I've heard it's really good.
I mean, Boondocks is my favorite, but I'm just going off what I think the list is.
I'm going South Park 1, Simpsons 2, Flintstones 3. That's kind of the OG.
Yeah, I don't count those as animated series.
How is the Flintstones not an animated series? It was in primetime. It was the original animated series.
I just consider that a cartoon.
Futurama? Beavis and Butthead, Bob's Burgers. All right, guys.
I would consider those animated series. I would consider a cartoon for children. Like Doug is a cartoon. It's not an animated.
What's
series.
What's Darkwing yeah. Duck?
Archer is an animated series. The Tick is an animated series. I wouldn't consider the Jetsons to be an animated series.
What about Pinky and the Brain? All right, we got to move on. With less than 1 second left in a tie game yesterday between Georgia and Mississippi State. By the way, I had money on this game. I lost money on this game. A Georgia fan threw a stuffed bulldog on the court, a stuffed animal, resulting in a technical foul. Mississippi State shot a free throw with less than 1/2 second left and ended up winning the game. Is that the worst rule that you've ever heard? Is that worse than the fumbling the ball through the end zone at the 1 yard line and the other team gets the ball rule?
I actually don't think that's a bad rule.
What?
This rule, I actually don't think that's a bad rule.
It's a terrible rule.
This is my argument for it. Almost every rule is in favor of the offense. One rule is in favor of the defense. It's like, oh my God, it's the worst rule ever. Think about how many rules we would say. We agree, pass interference is so imbalanced toward the defense.
Yeah, the penalty doesn't fit the crime.
The offense does it all the time. How many times do we see offensive players push off and grab and do all that stuff? It is very weighted. Forward progress is a purely only benefits the offense. Forward progress never benefits the defense, and we're all fine with forward progress. So, yes, we can keep going through rules that only benefit one side of the ball. This one rule only benefits the other side of the ball, and we all hate the rule.
Here's why it makes no sense.
Changing defensive pass interference, I'm also in favor of not losing possession when you fumble into the end zone.
I'm a big believer
of... It's absurd.
I'm a big believer of you know the rules. You can fumble anywhere else and keep the ball.
Correct, which is why you should be able to go in the end zone. But I'm saying is
you can have a 75-yard run. You get to the 5-yard line. The defense catches up to you, punches the ball out of bounds. It goes out of bounds. The 1-yard line, you get to keep possession.
How about this? It goes to the 20. Can we compromise
here?
No,
you lose the football. That's why.
Hold on, CDOT.
I'm telling you. So
the fact if you have a 75-yard run, it gets knocked out of bounds at the 8-yard line, you keep the ball, you like that rule. But if you have a 99-yard run and it gets knocked out across the pylon, the other team gets the ball?
Hold on to the football. I say this all the time.
Well, yeah.
One of my biggest complaints about adults is we tell kids that life isn't fair and then complain about how unfair life is. You get to keep possession anywhere else on the field. Don't fumble. That's all you got to do.
You guys do understand, though, yesterday that, in theory, if you had money on the game, if you had money on Mississippi State,
and
it was a tie game, and you were a fan, and you decided to take a stuffed animal and throw it on the court, you actually affected the outcome of the game.
I mean, we're talking about two different things. I agree with you. That rule, the players
I'm looking at it from
nothing,
a gambling perspective.
The players had nothing to do with it. So to penalize the players and have a outcome on the game, I think is wrong here. The fans should be kicked out. The fans shouldn't be allowed to come back. I'm with you. I will fight for forever about the fumble rule because, again, just hold on to the ball, Tiki Barber. Out here looking like Jamal Charles against the Broncos.
I don't know if you guys heard, but Zion blew his Nike out last night in the Duke Carolina game. I want to know what's the most comfortable and uncomfortable pair of shoes that you fellas have ever owned. My Doc Martens back in high school, they were ugly as hell because my parents would only let me spend like $60, so I had to get the discount ones. They were the matted black Docs, but they were really comfortable. The most uncomfortable pair? The KD3s. I had the original Kevin Durant Nikes. For some reason, they weren't very comfortable.
The most comfortable shoes I've ever worn, the Nike Air Yeezys were just, I mean, they were $300, so they should have been really comfortable. Those were really comfortable. The Adidas Ultra Boost that are out right
people
now.
People love the Ultra Boost.
They're really expensive, but they're really worth it. Those are really comfortable shoes. The Jordan 9s I really like, too. I don't know what it is about them, but they put a little extra cushion at the top. Those are probably my three.
My most uncomfortable...
I actually got another one, but go ahead.
The Adidas T-Mac 2s. Did you guys ever wear those?
Yeah, the T-Mac 2s.
Early 2000s.
Those suck.
Those were real bad. My most comfortable, these are going to be ones that CDOT's never heard of. The A6 Nimbus 20. They're running shoes. Nobody cares.
Another shoe I really thought was comfortable was the Air Max 2010s. Super comfortable.
Was it the Scottie Pippins that had the big air? Said air on the side? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, the Air Up Tempos.
Those weren't bad. Top10s.com came up with their list of the 10 smartest people to ever walk the face of planet Earth. I want to see how smart you guys are. You guys can combine your knowledge. And let's see if we know what the 10 smartest people did.
This sounds like an awful exercise.
Here we go. What did Albert Einstein do?
What is he on the list? I'm trying to understand the question.
These are the top 10 smartest people of all time.
So, like,
I just want to see how smart you are. I want to see if you guys know what these people did. What's Einstein famous for?
He invented the atomic bomb.
Isaac Newton.
Gravity.
Tesla?
The car. I don't know nothing
else.
No,
he did something else. I don't know what he did, though. Galileo.
How are you testing us but don't have the answer?
Because I'm the one who asked the question. It's the mind of the machine. It's not the mind. Oh, here's the rest of
it. You're saying is I could have come up with literally any answer. You're like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Stephen Hawking on the list, Ben Franklin, Charles Darwin, Aristotle, and they had Edison at number one. All right, back into sports. Buddy Hield said that he would bet his house, not like theoretically, he would bet his actual house on the Kings making the playoffs. If you're curious, they're 30-27 and in ninth place in the West. What's the biggest?
It's not about to be homeless because the Lakers are making the playoffs.
What's the biggest bet that you guys have ever made and lost? When KU lost to Carmelo Anthony in the national championship game, I had three separate prop bets. I had KU was going to win the game by 4.5. That didn't happen. I had Kirk Heinrich is going to make at least 2.5 threes. That didn't happen. And I had Aaron Miles is going to have at least 6 assists, and that didn't happen. I lost a cool 750 on that game.
I've never lost that much money because I don't like gambling that much money because it would ruin my enjoyment of sports. Like, I don't want to watch sports and have that much onto it. I went through a I like playing craps phase at the casino. And after I lost about $300 in 30 minutes, I was like, I'm cool. I don't want to play this game anymore. This isn't really that fun.
My biggest loss was Tim Tebow starting in the playoffs against the Steelers. I took the Steelers and put like $100 on that game because it was Tim Tebow in the playoffs. And then Tim Tebow had the miraculous throw that won them the game.
By the way, Nikola Tesla was a Serbian-American inventor, electrical engineer, mechanical engineer, and physicist. Comedian Aziz Ansari turns 35 tomorrow. C-Dot, is he a top three comedian today? I've got...
Not anymore.
I got... Did he get in trouble or something? Did I miss something?
Yes, he got in trouble.
Oh, crap.
Man, why are you always bringing up all these guys?
Well, I didn't talk about Louis C.K. I left that one out on purpose. By the way, if you want to see some good... I think Chappelle is still probably at the top of this list. C-Dot, actually, he's going to hate me for saying this, but C-Dot put together this awesome Chappelle video that's on YouTube. Quick, how do I find that thing?
Go on my YouTube page, youtube.com/C-Dot Harrison.
If you want to see what I'm talking about, he took clips from the first season of Chappelle and mashed them together. Trust me, it's worth your time.
He'd be really proud of Aziz Ansari.
I should probably do more research on this, shouldn't I? Who's the Royals starter with more wins, guys? Danny Duffy
answer my top three. I wanted to answer my top three.
Yeah, go ahead. Go for it.
Chappelle... I think the top three is Chappelle, Chris Rock, Seinfeld. I think that's the top three comedians right now. You know who I really like?
Seinfeld's still top three? No, Bill Burr.
Bill Burr, I think, is really funny.
Bill Burr is who we're looking
for. Can I throw in an honorable mention who I just love?
As long as it's not Louis C.K. or Aziz. Yeah, go for it.
No, it's not. Cat Williams. Cat Williams deserved to
be. Cat's great. All right, guys. Royal starter with the most wins. Danny Duffy or The Field?
The Field.
Really?
The Field. I'm not sure Duffy's going to end the year in the rotation.
I figured both you guys. Really?
I agree with Brandon Kiley.
Oh, wow. If that happens, if you guys are right, and Danny Duffy isn't a guy who throws for 180 innings and wins. I know wins aren't the be-all, end-all in Major League Baseball, but if he's not what a number three starter at least is supposed to look like, wow, this team's not going to hit their 69-win threshold. Final one, does Joel Embiid ever win an NBA title?
I'll go yes.
I'm going to go no because I don't think him and Ben Simmons work in the long run. I'm going to go no.
I think that his career's just beginning. We're talking about he's going to be one of the best players in the league as long as he remains healthy, which is a big if, for at least the next decade. So I'm going to say, yeah, he wins.
I mean, he's hurt right now. There was a tweet circulating that said, my understanding is that the Chiefs are not planning on keeping both D Ford and Justin Houston. It'll be one or the other. We'll get more into it coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
I want to read you guys a tweet from Matt Verderam, a fan sided. Coming up at 4 o'clock, we'll talk a little bit of college basketball, and we haven't done these in a while. We'll do a People's Court. We'll let you guys weigh in coming up in just a little bit. This is from Matt Verderam, a fan sided. My understanding is that the Chiefs are not keeping both D Ford and Justin Houston. It will be one or the other. Additionally, Houston is not going to take a restructure that doesn't include more guaranteed money. There will not be a pay cut in Kansas City. If you guys are unfamiliar with the financial ramifications with Justin Houston, let's just say this. As it would currently sit, if he's on the team and nothing happens to Justin Houston, he will be the highest paid player on the team. Now, if you've been watching the Chiefs this year, last year, whatever season, Justin Houston hasn't been the best player on the Chiefs in like 5 seasons. So I think it's very safe to say there is no possible way that Justin Houston is going to be on the team in the same financial capacity that he's in. I will be very curious because it is possible to do, but it's different with Justin Houston because he's only got 1 year to restructure, where a lot of times where restructure happens, they happen early on in your contract or you have multiple years left that they can kind of move some money around. The Chiefs, they can't move money around because he's only got 1 year. You obviously don't want to extend Justin Houston. And moving the money around in this context, you got big-time contracts coming up. You got Kendall Fuller's contract coming up. And you got, I don't know, Patrick Mahomes' contract coming up. It will be disappointing to me if Justin Houston isn't willing to listen to a restructure. But I do agree with this. The only way Justin Houston is on the team is if he is willing to take significant less money. I think that's the only way that he's on the team.
Well, based on what you just told us, Maybe he'll take less money, but he wants more guaranteed money. And the Chiefs aren't in the business of giving away more money. They overpaid for Sammy Watkins. That's kind of been the MO the last few years. It's been timing and when they've handed out these contracts. To me, the same thing you did a couple of years ago with Tom Bahali. You say, thanks for your services. You're probably going to be in the Ring of Honor, but bye-bye. Same thing you did last year with Derek Johnson. You've been great on the defensive side of the ball, a team leader, probably going to end up in the Ring of Honor, but bye-bye. You do with the aforementioned Eric Berry and Justin Houston. I understand that you can renegotiate and you can restructure, and if you really wanted both Eric Berry and Justin Houston back in the Chiefs uniform, that could happen. As a fan, I'm not interested in it at all, which is why I just figure, let's be proactive, not reactive. It got so old, C-Dot, this entire year talking about Eric Berry when I knew damn well that there was a better than 50, 60, 70% chance he wasn't going to play the next week or the next month or maybe the entire season. And who are we really talking about? A guy that hasn't had a major impact on the team for a couple of years. Same thing with Justin Houston. So when it comes to what they've done their entire career, you're talking about really good football players. When it comes to their actual value last year and going forward, not much, which is why if I'm the Chiefs, I stop having this conversation and just go ahead and get out ahead of it. And I cut both Eric Berry and Justin Houston as soon as I possibly can.
Because I'm looking at right now the guaranteed money. I understand contracts. We don't have every single letter of it when it comes to the contracts. According to OverTheCap.com, really good website. I use either OverTheCap or SpotRack to get my contract information. His base salary right now, $15.2 million. Now, they've got out a lot of the guaranteed money with Justin Houston. That's why they can cut him. But his base salary would be $15.2 million. Would he be interested in taking a lower cap money in exchange for the Chiefs just giving you money up front? My argument would be, if I'm Brett Veach, if I'm over there, man, we've given you a lot of money, and we haven't gotten close to our return on investment. At the time we gave you the contract, we gave you, what, one of the five highest-paid defensive contracts in the NFL.
Where he's going to pull a Gilmesh and be like, yeah, you're right, I owe you one.
And then even if you want to factor in over time, what's happened? Aaron Donald's contract, Khalil Mack, he still signed one of the 15 biggest defensive contracts in the history of the NFL. Why are we going to guarantee you more money when we don't trust if you're going to be healthy? If that's the case, I'm not faulting you, Justin Houston. Go get your money, go get paid. It's the NFL, you got a short, who knows what can happen. You can go out there and then break your leg tomorrow. If I'm the Chiefs, if you're not interested in trying to win a Super Bowl, if you're not interested in finding a number that works for both of us, then, hey, go to the Buffalo Bills who can pay you more but win four games next year. I would take a hard-line stand with somebody who I've given $60 million guaranteed, having gotten anything close to my investment that says, hey, the only way I want to be back is if you guarantee me more money. I'm good. No thanks.
Well, it's going to be a really interesting conversation between Brett Veach and Justin Houston and Justin Houston's agent when they all sit down in a room and they go, okay, here's what we owe you next year on paper, $15-plus million. Here's what we've paid you so far, and here's what we're willing to give you. Because to me, that's when Justin Houston's going to walk out the door. If he's owed $15 million, from a Chiefs perspective, they should probably offer him $10 million less. And nobody's going to take a $10 million pay cut. Like you said, he could probably go to Buffalo or somewhere else and make $7 or $8 million. But I don't see him in a Chiefs uniform going forward because I think Justin Houston has too much pride and thinks he has too much left in the tank to take a $10 million pay cut.
We actually got some breaking news right now in the world of sports. The NBA has submitted to the National Basketball Players Association a formal proposal that will lower the draft eligible age to 18. Right now, the draft eligible age is 19. I wonder if this is in reaction to what happened yesterday with Zion Williamson. The timing does seem rather convenient. Now, I don't think something like this just happens in 24 hours. Hey, something happened to Zion. Let's try to change it. But the NBA has officially submitted to the NBA Players Association a formal proposal that will lower the draft eligible age to 18 years old. This is the side I've always been on. If you want to go to college rather than the NBA, I got absolutely no problem with it. But I do understand college basketball and them wanting to keep players. I've always been in favor of baseball's model. I think baseball model does it right. If you're Bryce Harper, if you're Eric Hosmer, and you want to go straight from high school to professional baseball, I got no problem with it. But if you want to go to college and you decide to step on a college campus, we need some level of commitment here. I'd rather you have the option to go straight from high school to the NBA, or if you decide to go to Duke, if you decide to go to Kansas, you got to stay there for two semesters. Because right now, it's a joke all the way around. We all know what happens here. They try enough academically the first semester. They don't do anything the second semester, because why does it matter? if you fail out, what does it matter? Zion Williamson is going to get $1 million here coming up in 3 months. I don't really care so much about how my grades are the second semester. At least make it where if you're Zion Williamson, you don't have to go to Duke. You can go get your money. Or for the people that want to go to college that need that couple years of season and to develop their game, if you sign up to go to Kansas, you got to stay for 2 years. That would be my rule.
18 is kind of that threshold age for being on your own, right? Like when you're 18, a lot of people say, the parents go, well, you're 18, now you're out of my house. And when you're 18, you can buy cigarettes. Or when you're 21, you can drink and you can gamble. It's weird that the NBA has set their number at 19 because it seems like anybody else in any other industry, if you want to go out there and make money, once you're 18 years old, if you're talented enough as a actor, or if you're a doctor like Doogie Howser, MD, the young great, you can pretty much do it. But the NBA knows it has nothing to do with the age rule. It has everything to do with the marketing because they want these guys. They want to have Kevin Durant with 1 year at Texas. They want to have Greg Oden with 1 year at Ohio State, opposed to those high school players. As much as we talk about LeBron James and Tracy McGrady and Kevin Durant and Kobe Bryant, there are another 10 guys for every one of those guys mentioned that you've never heard of that flamed out. That's probably bagging groceries somewhere right now. So to me, the NBA is being a little bit disingenuous with pretending like they're trying to lower the rule because they love the fact that they get basically people that are already really famous their rookie year.
Like Trae Young. Like Trae
exactly.
Young was a really good high school
player. What
would
he have been coming out of high school, though, straight to the NBA? Nobody would have known who Trae Young was.
Yeah, no, you would. I mean, you'd have to be a super recruiting junkie to really know who Trae Young was. But he goes to Oklahoma. He has a really good year. He goes top five.
Free advertisement for the NBA.
That's why I always argue. I'm never going to make it seem like there's no benefit to playing major college basketball. There's a benefit. Now, one side gets more of the benefit, but that's like most people. Intercom gets a better deal than I get. They're the billion-dollar company. I'm not the billion-dollar company. That's just kind of how life works. Now, I am allowed to get as much as I can. It's capitalism. So I'm all for players being able to get as much as they can. Speaking of college basketball, coming up in 2 minutes, we'll have our first People's Court in a long time, and it's college basketball related. We'll get into it coming up next. It's The Drive.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.